give you a life application. They don't think you're going to really appreciate it because we all come to this place where we need to know this fact that we're going to talk about tonight. And it's demonstrated in the illustration that Matthew gives and the purpose for it all. But just think back to where we've been on Wednesdays. And I know we kind of, when you skip a week, it's hard enough to go from week to week. When you skip a week, you can really control it all. And so what I want us to do is kind of look at this one idea that Matthew has been teaching us. Jesus is leaving the Galilean area. Actually, he's already done that. He's going to Jerusalem, right? Now, what are some reasons that he's going to Jerusalem? Lots of different ways we could say it. So how would you describe it? What's his purpose for going to Jerusalem? All right, so we can sum it up with one word, as Kurt did, the cross. And so that's the main thing that's going to be on the horizon for Jesus Christ. He's going to Jerusalem, and he's going to have to face the cross there. What else is going to take place in Jerusalem? What's the reason that everyone's migrating that way? The Passover is there. That's where every year the Jews, all the Jewish males, had come to Jerusalem three times a year. That was a religious choir. And they had certain festivals and religious things that they had to take care of. And it was a time of looking back and remembering what God had done for them. So the Passover is one of those. The Passover is when a lamb was killed to represent for the family, and every family had to bring a lamb. That lamb represents Jesus Christ. The lamb is a substitute that takes the place for our death. And so it was just a picture. And when Jesus goes to Jerusalem this time, exactly what he's doing is he knows this, but everyone else doesn't. He's going to fulfill the real Passover. He's going to be the real substitute. And everyone else doesn't really grasp this. They wouldn't, except for the disciples. They really should understand that. Why should the disciples understand that if no one else does?
He told them.
Over and over he told them, didn't he? And so they have this understanding. They got the knowledge. They just got to believe it and listen to it. All right, so he's going to Jerusalem. There will be a cross. So let's say it this way. He's going to Jerusalem for the Passover. At Jerusalem, he's going to be arrested. At Jerusalem, he's going to be sentenced, he's going to be condemned, he's going to be beaten, and he's going to be crucified. And at Jerusalem, he's going to take our place. And all of these things are on his mind. He knows why he's going there. He goes every year, but this is the last time that he'll be going, because this is the year he fulfills all that. So put that in perspective as we get ready to read this story. But I'm going to give you the life application. I'm going to give you what I want you to really think about as we walk through this. And all of us have been to this place before. I flip the slide and tell it to you. You're in this building. You're human. You've come to a place where you know you need to pray. You need to ask God for some things, but there's something that comes up. There's a voice, not an audible voice, hopefully. If it's an audible voice, we'll have a different conversation about that later. But there's just something that tells you God didn't have time for you. Or God's tired of hearing about this. Or you really should, that's not big enough deal for you to bring up. I mean, sometimes we have this. I try to break people this habit, but I know why we do it sometimes. But we'll get up and we'll have a prayer request, and it'll start off like this. This might not be a big deal to everybody else, but just stop right there. A prayer request is because it's a big deal to you. And we want to make sure we always understand that. But what happens is we sometimes get insecure. And we get to the place we feel like, I don't know if God really wants to respond to this. It really affects our prayer life. When we really believe that God will respond, we will call out to God and do something. But when we don't, there's underlining in that is, it's not that important to God. And behind that is, maybe I'm not that important to God. And there's more people that's important to God. There's someone else. He needs to help his Nancy with her back. He doesn't have time to worry with my anxiety, my problem, what I'm stressed over. He doesn't have time to worry for my kidneys, right? This Allie got some really good news. She was a stage 4 kidney failure, kind of, and now she's a stage 3. The doctor has changed that. So that's really good news. Alice has prayed about that. She's asked us to pray about it. Well, the last thing that she would want to do is get to a place and think, well, God's not concerned with my kidneys. He's got bigger things to do. You know, like run the universe and take care of all his other problems and things. So we do get that place sometimes. We don't always admit, but I promise you this, over 20 years of me pastoring and even as me growing up as a Christian, I've heard many, many, many people that felt like their situation was not important enough. And sometimes that comes out of insecurity. It doesn't look, but when our faith is in this next statement, it will change your prayer. And here's that statement. You are a what? Hopefully I spelled it right, but yeah, y'all got the word. You are a priority to who?
Jesus.
And you can say that you're a priority to God. You're a priority to Jesus. What does it mean to be a priority? I mean, sometimes y'all come to me and I'm in the middle of doing things and you start telling me stuff and I'm trying to, I'm like everyone else. I'm trying to do this and I want to remember, wait, stop, pay attention to them. Let them know, because I'm listening. Sometimes when we get really used to doing a lot of different things, we learn how to listen while we do stuff, but we forget that doesn't always tell people that you're listening. And sometimes we have to kind of really focus and let them know that you're a priority. I want to know what you're saying. I want to know about those things. So when we get this back now, it changes your prayer. You are a, say it one more time, you are a
priority
to Jesus. You're a priority. I didn't start it. I was kind of doing it
since you just got the whole application.
Yeah, we probably. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, I'll give you just a second.
Okay, now I should be doing it. Anybody that's following us live on Facebook, we're getting in a little bit late. But we are going to cover this one back again. We're talking about people that sometimes feel that their prayer is not as important, not important enough for God, or not important enough to share and have everyone else pray for. And so we have been going over this, and we've grouped to help you one more time. You are a
priority
to
Jesus.
And when you realize that, it will change. So many times in the ministry, I mean, sometimes people come by and they say, well, there's a certain prayer request you don't want everyone to know about. It's a private prayer request. But there are some times when people come and they're like, well, I didn't mention this because I just didn't feel like it was, important enough to bring up for the church. But you know what? When you start to realize you are a priority to God, then everything's important. You take some of these little children through here, they don't try to measure how important is my request or what I want. They just want your attention, right? I mean, they just interrupt you enough. She'll come to you and even pop. Doesn't matter if you're talking, doesn't matter. And she might not want something really big, but what she wants is important to her. And what she realizes is, if I get Papa's attention, it'll be important to him too. And so when we recognize this fact, this is what I want you to really grasp, because it will change your prayer life. And so let's look at Matthew chapter number 20. And we're going to start at verse number 29. Matthew 20:29 starts with this. The Bible says, "And as they departed from Jericho, a great multitude followed him." And what Matthew's doing is Matthew is walking us through this process where Jesus is in one area, and now he's going to make his way over into Jerusalem. And what he's doing, he's coming out of Jericho. And if you read the same account in Luke and in Mark, you're going to see it worded just a little bit different, but I promise you it's not a discrepancy. We'll kind of get to that. In this one, he's departing from Jericho. And the other, you're going to read that he was going into Jericho. And one of the issues about that is there's two parts of Jericho. Some say two Jericho. There's old Jericho, where it was, and then there's the new Jericho, where the newer part actually existed. And he was coming from one into the other. So it's not really a contradiction. But the point is, Jericho is getting really close to Jerusalem. And so this journey that Jesus is taking, he's getting really close. What did we say, and we'll keep reminding you of this, what did we say was waiting for him in Jerusalem? The cross. Is he aware of that fact?
Yes.
So if the cross was waiting on you in Jerusalem, what would be on your mind? that cross, that's a good point. That cross would be on your mind. Matter of fact, it would be hard to think about other things. Behind him, he's been dealing with these disciples. What have the disciples been having struggle with? Yeah, who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? Is it me? Is it him? And two of his disciples, James and John, have decided, let's try to get the edge on it. They bring their mom along, who is his aunt, and they have her ask him if they can sit on the right hand and the left hand. Jesus just told them, I'm going to Jerusalem, and I'm going to die there. And their next response seems to be, can we be on the right hand and left hand when you get to your kingdom? So he's dealing with that. Because he needs these disciples, but he's been trying to teach them to love each other more than themselves. So just think about, I'm wanting to set the stage for what may be going through the mind of Jesus Christ. You ever been distracted? I mean, you had some really important things on your mind, stuff that you couldn't just get it out of your mind. And in that time, isn't that the worst time for people to ask you for things? I just can't focus with that right now. Right? I mean, I just got all this, and you want this? So as he's going, and we have a multitude following. By the way, let's throw the multitude in there again, because what's it like being in a multitude? A little hard to focus, right? The multitude is not following him like quietly, right? I mean, they're going to be loud. There's a lot of bumping and moving, and everyone, it's chaos. So Jesus has the cross on his mind, his disciples and their issues on his mind, and a multitude of people around him. Now notice, and behold, two blind men sitting by the wayside, when they heard that Jesus passed by, cried out, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou son of David. So two blind men. In Mark, we find out that one of those blind men's name was Bartimaeus. You ever heard about blind Bartimaeus? And so it's interesting. Matthew doesn't tell us his name. Mark does tell us his name. Many people believe when you get a name like that from one of the Gospels, it's probably because that person is well known among the church. The early church probably had an idea of who Bartimaeus was. And here, you're hearing a story. Just like over the past several weeks, we've kind of given people, you know who Kurt is, here's how he got to be a part of the church. You know who the Manleys are, here's how they got to be a part of the church. Sometimes we do that with our salvation. We'll have people come up and share, this is when I got saved, and here's the story. And so here, this church is learning about Bartimaeus and what happened in his life. Now, that Bartimaeus, they know, can see. But when they meet him here, what is his condition? He's blind. And he's with another. And the Bible says that he's sitting beside the road. Now, do you think he just got tired and took a seat? What's he doing sitting beside the road? He's begging. Mark tells us that, but also we can kind of understand. They're in the pathway of traffic. And the only way for these blind people to support themselves, to have food, to have anything, is to beg. They need the compassion of other people. And blind people were not uncommon in this day and time. A lot of them were blind from birth. They were, because of disease and different things that take place through the birthing process, their eyes would become infected sometimes. And many of them lost their sight from birth. Blind people were not uncommon. So here you have these blind people there. And what is it that blind people are doing? And this crowd's coming through, and it's interesting. This crowd is following who?
Jesus.
And yet they're ignoring these blind people. They're all about following Jesus, but they're ignoring people that have needs along the way. We as Christians can fall into that really quick. You know, we're all about being a part of church, but we forget sometimes to stop and help that have needs. And we can overlook those people very easily. Matter of fact, the more that people have needs, the easier it is to overlook them. The more blind people there was there, the more common it was, the easier it is to overlook them. And so these people are concerned about Jesus, or they're just concerned with following Jesus rather than they're not concerned with him. They're concerned with following him and seeing what else he may do. And the blind men cry out, and notice what they said, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou son of who? Now, what was Jesus' earthly stepfather's name? I guess we should say. So why did they call him son of David? So he's a descendant of King David, And Matthew actually takes us there in the very beginning of his book. Son of David is a title. It's a reference to the Messiah. All right, so when they're calling him Son of David, they're not just saying he's in this, he's a descendant of David. They're acknowledging him as that we know the Messiah is coming, this promised person, and this is his title. And when they called him Son of David, that's exactly what they were doing. They were acknowledging that we believe that you are the Messiah that's coming, which says something now about their faith. They're not just calling out to a miracle worker that's there. They're recognizing this person is coming through here. He is a person. He's the Messiah. He can do whatever we want him to do. All right, so notice something else about these guys. As Jesus is passing by this way, they find out, they discover, they hear the crowd, they expect people to go by, and they just think about being blind, Bartimaeus and his friend. All of a sudden, you hear that Jesus has come by. That's your one and only opportunity. If you're going to get a miracle, it's got to be today, right? Because how many other times are you going to encounter Jesus Christ? They may not ever get that opportunity. They don't know if he's going to Jerusalem to die. All they know is he's never passed by their way before, and he may never pass by their way again, and he just has passed by their way. So all of a sudden, here's what's going on. They recognize he's near, and they recognize we may never get this opportunity again. So what do you think they do? They cry out. So, do you think they said, "Hey, Jesus"? What do y'all think they did? They were giving everything they had. They put all that they had into calling out to him and asking for mercy. There was an effort and an energy involved in this. What if they had simply said, "Well, we're just two blind men. He's probably not too concerned with us." What would have happened to them? They'd stayed blind and not been in our story, most likely. But they believed. And that belief that he can do, and the belief that he would be willing to do something, changed the way they called out. They knew one thing. We've got to get his attention. And that's what they set themselves on doing. Verse number 31, this kind Christian multitude, what did they do? They rebuked him. What does that mean? They got on to be quiet. Stop bothering him. Leave him alone. He doesn't have any time for you. He's traveling. And besides that, he's more concerned with us than what we're trying to ask him to do. So this group is telling them, it reminds us of something else. In chapter number 19, we found that, I believe it's chapter 19, some of the parents were bringing children to Jesus, and the disciples rebuked them. Said, "Hey, you know, he got time to fool with just these little kids," and Jesus rebuked them. Now we see this multitude that's following Jesus around. You'd think this multitude who's following him would have a concern and say, "Wait a minute, here's some blind people. Let's get them to Jesus, and maybe he'll do something for them." But that's not what he does. This crowd says, "Hey, stop. Just stop." So if you're the blind person, and you cried out to Jesus, and by the way, you're a beggar, so you're low on the totem pole. You already know that you're not respected. You already have no self-esteem. And now everyone's rebuked you. What do you do next?
They don't cry out anymore.
Right. We don't know what we would do, but we know what they did. They thought they gave it everything they had the first time. But after they cried out, they got rebuked, and the crowd was being loud, telling them to be quiet. That was what it says, but they cried the more, which means they got louder. They really dug in. And they're saying, "Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David." Do you think Jesus heard them the first time that they cried out? Probably did. We don't really know why he didn't stop the first time. But we do know this. The Bible does teach us to pray earnestly and continue. That God hears our prayers. And sometimes it teaches us that when we don't have our prayers answered right away, that we're to cry out with him all the more. Let me ask you a question that I want you to really think about. Think of something you've prayed about in your life that you've been praying that is still unanswered. Maybe it's the salvation of somebody. Maybe it's something personal in your life that you need. God has not answered that prayer. How intense is your prayer now versus what it is? You know, for us, a lot of times it gets less. You know, it just kind of becomes a tag onto our other prayers. The Bible actually teaches us something oddly different. But the longer we go without seeing that prayer answered, the more earnestly we should be praying. And that's actually a reversal of how we probably practice in our prayer. And that shows us something that ought to change. We ought to cry out all the more. And when maybe someone discourages us from praying about it and says, you know, maybe that's just not going to happen, maybe that ought to encourage us to pray all the more. And so just think about your own prayer, like how this can change. You are a priority to God, and when you haven't had that prayer answered, the Bible doesn't teach us to just let it come, you know, just a routine and just let it go. It says, cry out all the more. That's exactly what they did. They cried out all the more. So they got louder, more intense. I think they had a good way of blocking out the crowd. And so now something's getting ready to change. Verse number 32. Jesus stood still. So all of a sudden Jesus has heard them, I believe, the first time, or the first several times. I don't believe they just did it twice. I believe he heard them in the beginning. And the crowd hushed them. It's almost as if it's a test. And they cried out all the more, and the Bible says that Jesus stood still. He stopped. Now something is happening. Of course, the interesting thing is the blind people are blind. So do they see him stand still? But I bet they start picking up that something's different. The crowd, the tone, everything, it starts to change. The Bible says he stood still and called them. And said, what will ye that I shall do unto you? And of course, they do give a request. They say unto him, Lord, that our eyes may be open. But I want to go back to something I started in the beginning. Where is Jesus going? He's going to Jerusalem. What's waiting him in Jerusalem? What's the problems he's been dealing with the disciples?
They just don't get it.
Who's around him? All this is taking place. And yet Jesus stops. For too long. Just think of how big that is. Blind men are beggars. They have no status. They have nothing to offer. They're not important, if I can say it that way. To society, they're not important. But when Jesus stood still, what happened to the crowd? Did the crowd just keep going and going past him? They stood still too, right? All of a sudden, these two blind men, because they have now been placed as a priority to Jesus because he calls out to them. And that puts everyone else on hold. And nothing is going to take place until these two blind men have their time with Jesus Christ. What happened to them? God began to show them they are a priority. Everything that he's got going on, they were priority. With everything ahead of him and all of the stress and all of the problems and all of the cross and all of the suffering, they were the priority at that moment. And that speaks something really big to us. When you pray and you cry out to God, you are a priority. If that does not change your prayer life, there is not anything I know of as a pastor that can ever change your prayer life. To recognize and to know that you're not just throwing out a prayer on deaf ears, you're not just throwing out a prayer and God doesn't have time for you, or he looks at it and says, that's not important. But when you're calling out to God about a need in your life, you are a priority. And I like the visual, I like the idea of everything stuff. Now, I know that God can multitask, so I got that. Okay. But I do like that. idea, just thinking symbolically in this idea that Jesus, that God's in heaven, and he's running the universe, and he's running the kingdom, and he's taking care of everything, and then you cry out to him. Everything sucks. You are one. That makes you feel pretty important. Make you feel like it's worth asking God. That your prayer can be answered. See, these men knew something. If we get his attention, if he gives us his attention, he can change my life. He can give me my sight. With us, we do something a little different. You know, I got all this stuff on my mind. I got all this going on. I look over, I get the two blind men, I already know what they need, right? What do they want? They want to see. So I already know that. I'm just going to turn around and go, okay, you can see. And now I'm going to turn around and keep going, right? That's me. Y'all know that. You're around here talking to me all the time. You see me do that kind of stuff. Not your sight, but you understand what I'm saying. But not Jesus. He doesn't put words in their mouth. And he doesn't let them off by just crying out. But he turns to them and he says, what will ye that I shall do unto you? You ask me what you want me to do. You tell me. Okay. I have heard people, and it's okay for me this way, but I would suggest changing a little bit. I have heard some people say, I don't really pray a lot about this because God knows what I need. Well, God has told us to ask him. So if you've gotten in that place where you don't pray and ask God for certain things because, well, God knows. No, he's told us to ask him. Matter of fact, he says, you have not because you
ask.
He never said, you have not because I don't know what you need. He says, you have not because you
ask.
And when you ask and God doesn't answer, ask again. Ask more earnestly. Ask more intent. Continue to pray. And so with them, he turns and he says, what will you that I shall do? Now, it's interesting because just previously, two of his disciples came with their mom and said, we'd like to ask you for something. We want you to grant it to us. And he said, well, what is it that you want? They asked for something they didn't really ask for, right? There's a contrast that's being made here. These men come and they want their something. They could have asked for a lot of stuff, but they just asked for a couple things. Give me my sight. We want to be able to see. He said, verse 33, they say unto him, Lord, that our eyes may be open. Verse number 34. So Jesus had, there's a big word there.
Compassion.
What is compassion? It means that he actually cares, he feels, he's connected to what they're going through. So here's a couple things that we're learning through this. One, you have a prayer request, ask it. Ask specifically what you want God to do. When God doesn't answer it right away, what do we do now?
Ask
again. Ask more earnestly. Ask more consistently. Stay at it. And then we look and notice this. We are a priority. When I believe that God's listening, yeah, no matter who it is, we've got young people in here, and you can pray. You can ask God for things. You are a priority. And under that, we understand this. God has compassion for me. He cares. There's a lot of people in this world, there's something they just don't understand. Not only that they get that there is a God, but even among Christians, they don't understand God has compassion for you. He cares about you. And he feels for you. As a parent does a child. And I can think so many times about I remember my mom. I kind of said this story before. I remember my mom getting ready to go off to work, and I was still in bed. I remember that super mom sense that she had. She turned around, she came back over. I didn't even know she knew I was awake. She came over to the bed, and she said, "What's wrong?" And I remember thinking, "How did she know that?" And yet she cared. It really mattered. My dad worked second shift, so he was the one that was home in the morning. My mom worked first; she would get up and go. Sister had to pick me up for school, which is why we never got along, because I wasn't easy to get up. And, she'd ask, she'd holler, she She came in there hollering, you know, are you going to get up or not? And I thought, well, it's the first time you asked me. It won't. Not yet. It's several times. So, but if you stay home from school, if you were sick in the morning and you're staying home, you had to get past this one obstacle. Dad was going to wake up a little bit later. And he's going to walk through and he's going to figure out you're home. At first, he was always going to be a little irritated. Why ain't you at school? You know. And then you tell him you're sick. You give him a few minutes, and then he'd come back around. You want some ginger ale? Let me go to the store and get you something. You know, he got really nice later. You had to get past that initial, why are you home from school? And so, but he always cared. And we always knew this. He was going to do something for you. If you were sick. And what God does is he teaches us, I care. Your priority. I have compassion. So the Bible says Jesus had compassion on them. And notice this one. He doesn't just speak it, but he touched their eyes. That physical contact, that touch. He touched their eyes, and I love this word. So with all of Jesus' miracles, immediately their eyes received sight. And then notice this last part. They did what? They became his disciples. Okay, it's pretty interesting. They're just on the roadside begging while the multitude goes towards Jerusalem to take the Passover, and yet now these two blind men are able to actually begin that same journey themselves. They can go. One of the interesting things is when Jesus touched their eyes, they opened their eyes, what's the first thing they saw?
Jesus.
And that's a pretty cool thing to be the first thing. And so we kind of see this whole process, and I want to remind you one more time, you are a priority. You're a priority. You're a priority. That'll change everything. Because when you realize you're a priority to God, it'll change how you ask for something. It'll change how often you ask for something. And when we see that, it changes everything that we have. And so I want you to really, as you leave here today, I want you to think about it. You go home tonight, there's going to be some things you used to pray about. Pray again. There's some things that you're not sure about praying about. Pray then. And understand this, there's God to you, to Him. You are a priority. I'm going to close off here.